Okay, I'm calling the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is January 30th, 2018. With us today is Vice Chair Esel, Senator Wilson, Senator Egan, and Senator Coghill is not going to be with us today. In my trusty staff here is Christine Marsigan and Christopher Dickrell, correct? Okay. And Doug Bridges will be helping us conduct the meeting. So on today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 8, which is the PFD contributions to tribal governments, Senate Bill 154, PFD contributions to the general fund, and Senate Bill 130, voter approval of new taxes. It's my understanding, I'm new to this committee, but it's my understanding Senate Bill 8 has been heard before, and but this is the first hearing for the other two bills. Okay, so if the sponsor would like to join us here, Senate Bill 8, the PFD contributions to tribal governments. As I mentioned, the committee heard this bill March 28th. Senator Stevens, he's the sponsor of the bill, and Doug Lutch will give us a brief overview. It's my understanding here last year Senator Wilson had a question on this bill pertaining to prohibition of guardian contributing a child's PFD to a tribal government. So we'll see if that got answered, or maybe that'll be part of your briefing. So with that, Doug, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Thank you very much, Senator Meyer. And for the record, my name is Doug Lutch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens. Just to revisit this, we did hear this bill last year, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, and this bill's straightforward legislation to add tribal nonprofit, native nonprofit organizations and give them the ability to take part in the Pick-Lick-Give program. I know you're hearing this for the first time, Mr. Chair, but the process came about of doing this bill as a request from Kodiak's tribal organizations, contacted Senator Stevens, who unfortunately is unable to join us today due to another commitment outside of the building. And this is our effort to add them to the list. There's some folks here that can speak very eloquently to the Pick, Click, Give program. Nita Kemple from the Alaska Community Foundation and Sarah Race from the Permanent Fund Dividend Division is here and can answer Senator Wilson's question, and I understand that there'll be an amendment offered which will clarify what that intent is, and Senator Stevens is supportive of that amendment, and we think it's appropriate and would add to the clarity of the bill. I think there may be a person from Kodiak online to answer questions if she's not there already, Melissa Borton from the Fognak Native Organization. May be there. If not yet, she was supposed to be calling in.
Okay. I do not see her yet, but
I understand, Mr. Chair, that she is in the process of trying to get out of Kodiak, which can often be an adventure.
I understand.
Weather permitting, but she had her cell phone with her and was going to try and call in. And she's one of the individuals in one of the tribal organizations in Kodiak that approached us about the Pick-Lick-Give program. Pretty much everything in the sponsor statement I went over last year, and I'm not sure if you want me to read that again or just get to some specific questions I can answer or leave it to the experts.
Well, thank you, Doug, or Mr. Lutch. I'm not sure if we closed public testimony on this last year or not, but we'll go ahead and leave it open.
Sure.
Or reopen it just so everybody can become familiar, or me in particular can become familiar with this bill. And so why don't we go ahead and take public testimony if there isn't any questions at this time, and then we'll come back if there's some questions that come up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in fact, I believe all we did last year was to introduce the bill, and we did not have time for public comments, and through a series of events, you became the chair, and now we're back to this year.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lutch. Okay, so is there any questions for the sponsor before we get started here? Okay. Seeing none, then let's go ahead and go right to public testimony. And Nina Kemple, would you join us, please? So if you could, please put your name and your affiliation on the record for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nina Kempel. I am the CEO of the Alaska Community Foundation, which currently runs the Pick, Click, Give program in concert with our other partners, the Rasmussen Foundation, the Forker Group in the United Way, and Department of Revenue or Department of PFD. And I am here distinctly speaking on behalf of both the Forker Group and the Alaska Community Foundation. I think we have had discussions with the sponsor of this bill, and from the Pick, Click, Give program perspective, we have no inherent concerns with this bill, and believe that there actually was an IRS ruling that would allow federally recognized tribal organizations to receive a charitable donation. So at this time, we have no objection or concerns.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Let's move on then to Sarah. Sarah Race. There you are, Sarah. Again, if you could do the same, put your name and affiliation on the record for us, and then proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sarah Race. I'm the Permanent Fund Dividend Division Director. And I provided a fiscal note here that outlines how this process will potentially change a bit for the PFD division. It is in line with the other participating organizations and the fact that there's an application process and that 7% of the contributions are used for administering the program.
Okay, very good. So questions? I guess my question would just be, how did you arrive at the dollar amount that you did on your fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, we currently have a contract with United Way, and United Way is the one that actually does the application process for organizations to participate in the program, and we had contacted them to see what additional changes would have to be done to the application for participation and what the estimated hours of programming time that would require.
So they came up with that dollar amount?
They came up with the hours that they would expect to bill, and then we took an average rate of a programmer's time and multiplied that by the average rate.
Gotcha. Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you
for testifying. Okay, so let's see. Pamela Leary, is that correct? Yes. Did you want to testify? Or are you here for questions? Or?
I think I'm here for SB
154. Okay. Do you want to testify on SB 8 too? No. Okay. I've got you down here. All right. Thank you. Is there anyone else then who wants to testify on Senate Bill 8? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close the public testimony and bring the bill back before. Amendments you wanted to make?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move amendment number 8, Pick, Click, Give number 30-LS0176/A2. This motion is to insert a new bill section under page 4. Mr. Chairman, this amendment for Senate Bill 8 seeks to protect the emancipated minor's PFD from when a tribal minor is subject to adoption or guardianship proceeding a tribal in tribal court. This would be similar, Mr. Chairman, to our section and code now for 47.10.15 for permanent fund dividend under AS 43.23.15, where OCS puts basically a minor's PFD fund into a trust until that minor turns to 21 or reach 18 as longer or is emancipated. So we're just trying to protect basically the children's trust and PFD to make sure that that's not used to help fund their own tribal governments and trying to have a layer of protection for that.
Okay, very good. Mr. Letch, would you join us join the committee again, please.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Doug Letch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens. The amendment is a really good one, and Senator Stevens is supportive of that. We believe it will add clarification to the process. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Okay, is there any objections to so did you move your amendment? Or?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is there any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, then the amendment is adopted. So we have the bill as amended before us. We briefly talked about the fiscal note. Is there anything else the committee members would like to discuss on this bill? Okay, seeing, hearing none, Chair would entertain a motion. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill number, the committee moves Senate Bill number 8, version 30LS0176/alpha, as amended, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, is there any objections? Seeing, hearing none, then the bill moves as amended from committee. So with that, let's take a brief at ease while we sign the recommendation book.
That was hard.
You asked too many questions, Dennis.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to go down to...
Are you going to do it, or your staff, or both? You can stay there.
Okay.
Yeah, and then go ahead and have Gary come up. Senate State Affairs Committee back to order. We're now have Senate Bill 154 before us. This is a bill sponsored by Senator Wilson. And Senator Wilson, did you have any opening comments on your bill, Senate Bill 154, or do you want to turn this over to your trustee staff, Gary Zepp?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I just want to give a brief overview and
okay,
I'll turn
sure.
it over to Mr. Zepp to go over the sectional and may I cover anything else I may have missed.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
The Senate Affairs Committee, this bill, if enacted, would allow Alaskans applying for a permanent fund dividend to donate a portion or all of their permanent fund directly to the state general fund. Mr. Chair, we may have heard from several Alaskans over the portion of the debate on House Bill 115 and after the substitute from the House on Senate Bill 26 of PON. Alaskans giving their fair share back to the state of Alaska. We've heard from hundreds of Alaskans that wouldn't mind contributing, and that's not the will of my total district, but and being in retrospect, trying to find a equitable way for folks that may want to contribute and find a way to an easier way to accommodate those Alaskans that would like to donate a portion to the state general fund, a method and opportunity to do so. They're currently is an established mechanism during the Pick the Glove program, so this is why we are bringing this bill forth. Similar to Senate Bill 8, this, according to the Department of Administration, these donations would also be tax exempt, and they could use this tax exempt status can provide the complete relief from the taxes, reduce the rates, and only their tax, so the portion of their items. Any other cash donation to the general fund would be exempt from the 7% coronation or would not be required to pay the $250 fee. And we don't need to do the children protection piece because the OCS in China statute already has that mechanism in there for trust. And with that, I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Zepp.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Mr. Zepp, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to present Senate Bill 154 this afternoon. The sectional for Senate Bill 154, Section 1, amends AS43.23.62A by adding to the general fund and the general fund to allow contribution from the electronic Alaska Permanent Fund dividend to the state general fund. Section 2 amends AS43.23.062B to add the general fund to the list of organizations, community foundations, or charitable organizations eligible to be added to the contributions list. Section 3 amends 43.23.062M by adding general fund or to the list of organizations that do not have a coordination fee withheld. And it's, as you can see, it's a very short sectional. If you have any questions or need any additional information, I'd be glad to help. I can move on to the fiscal notes if you'd like, if there's no questions.
Yes, sir. Is there any questions? Okay, see no questions this time. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Okay.
Or Mr. Zepp with the fiscal note.
We received two fiscal notes in relationship to Senate Bill 154. The first one is from the Department of Administration, Centralized Administrative Services, Finance Division. And it's a zero fiscal note prepared on 12718. And I won't read the whole analysis, but the Division of Finance is submitting a zero fiscal note. They don't see any financial impact relation to this bill. The second fiscal note that we received in relationship to Senate Bill 154 is from the Department of Revenue, Taxation and Treasury, the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. And in FY19, there's a fiscal note amount for personal services of $20,300. And of note, for the outlying years from FY2020 and beyond, there's a fiscal impact of $10,000 annually. And I think the basic concept for the initial $20,300 is the programming that it would take would establish a new process. And Sarah Race can probably more eloquently describe the details of this, but the basic concept is there's already a process in place for the pick, click, and give programs for charitable organizations. There's not a formal process where an Alaskan can donate their either part or all of their Alaska Permanent Fund dividend back to the general fund to help the deficit. That process does not exist, and that's what this bill would help establish. So that's the initial programming cost. According to the fiscal note, the outlying years, I think, are really related to a programmer's time, also the PFD operations manager's position, because Ms. Race can describe this much better than I can, but again, the basic gist is that most of the questions that come in would be for the pick, click, or give program. So they would be the charitable folks or the community foundation would be able to answer those. But this is an internal governmental process, and so it would require PFD staff to actually field the questions and help Alaskans understand what this means. And that basically covers the sectional and the two fiscal notes that we've received on this Senate Bill 154.
Okay, very good. Is there any questions for the sponsor's aide? Okay, I don't see any. Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
Also, we did hear from a few members of the community which may feel that this program may politicize the Pick, Click, Give program, and that was not the intent of this opportunity. So I did want to make sure we address that concern, and we'll probably hear from a couple of nonprofits of that concern. So I just want to make sure that the committee was aware of that issue that we did have addressed within our office.
Okay, excellent. We do have somebody here from Department of Revenue, as well as the PFD division and the Treasurer division. I guess my only question is, shouldn't there be a fiscal note showing some revenue to the general fund, unless you don't anticipate anybody doing this? But I'm like you. I hear from folks all the time saying, go ahead and tax me. I'll be happy to give money to the general fund. So
the way I believe this is statute is that you cannot use that donation to help offset the cost of this program. So as a general revenue would go up, potentially, you can't just offset that without writing similar to, let's say, like a 7% coordination fee, so that funds off that donated could be allocated for that. So we're looking, and we've met with the Department of Revenue to look at ways that we can try to offset that ongoing cost, and maybe an amendment of that, some type of percentage fee off of the first donation could be used to offset some of that reoccurring cost.
Okay, and again, I'll ask the Department of Revenue, but I'm assuming if somebody wanted to just give the state of Alaska $1,500, they could do that. They could write a check.
Correct.
So what you're trying to do is save the taxes by having it taken off the PFD?
It would also be a tax deduction, but yes, we're just trying to ease the process for Alaskans.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, and committee members, Gary Zepp again. We met with the Community Foundation folks, and we're going to, as Senator Wilson had said, there is a little bit of concern about potential competition amongst donors and things like that, and we're going to work with them on the messaging to make sure folks understand the difference of their donations.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zepp. Senator Giesel.
So we get a dividend, and that has to be declared on our income report to the IRS, right? So this doesn't bypass that, does it?
Gary Zepp, for the record. Senator Giesel, I'm not a tax accountant, but I believe so.
Really?
And if I may offer another comment, the response we got back from the executive branch was this is considered a charitable donation.
Right. Whoops. So follow up, Mr. Sherman. So that makes it tax deductible, but nevertheless still income that you decided to donate. Consequently, you will be taxed on that income.
Gary Zepp, for the record, Senator Giesel through the chair, I believe so. Again, I'm not a tax accountant, so please don't hold me to that.
Sure. All right.
Well,
Thank you.
And I think we have some experts out in the audience that will come up. Okay. Is there any other questions from Mr. Zepp or Senator Wilson? All right. Well, then, why don't we go right to you're Ms. Race, right?
Okay. For the record, yes, Sarah Race. I'm the Permanent Fund Dividend Division Director.
Did you want to testify or answer questions or both?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I can answer the question that Senator Giesel just asked. And again, I'm not a tax professional. But once the dividend is issued, it becomes income. However, a contribution back to the state can be used as an itemized deduction, just like a contribution to a nonprofit.
Thank you.
Very good. If there's no other questions for Mr. Zepp or Senator Wilson, then why don't we just go ahead and go right to public testimony? And did you want to make any additional comments on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, no, thank you, unless you have any other questions that I could further answer.
Looks like Senator Wilson does. Thank you.
Can you, and through the process, many folks may ask, why not just decline the dividend? What happens if someone just declines a dividend? What happens to that during that process?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, if an individual declines a dividend, I would assume that they would not apply for a voluntary program. However, there is an option available that if somebody decided that they wanted to sign over their dividend or write a check back to the state, that they would just write the check back to Department of Revenue and that the funds would be deposited into the general fund. We do have a couple individuals every year that call and actually go through that process.
Okay, while we have you here, Ms. Race, I think Mr. Zepp did a pretty good job of explaining the fiscal note. Is there anything else you wanted to add to his explanation to the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I think he did do a pretty good job overall describing really the administrative costs that it would take on in this program, that it ends up being a little bit different. There is statute that is written that says that the department is not to use any operating funds from the dividend fund to administer the pick, click, give program. And so without the 7% fee being taken off or a application fee, that is why you do see the fiscal note in front of you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much for your assistance. Your input. Okay, so let's continue then with the public testimony. Nina? Nina Kempel, will you join us again and again put your name and affiliation on the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Nina Kempel, CEO of the Alaska Community Foundation. Before I begin my formal public testimony, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I would like to thank all of you guys, the legislators here in Juneau that actually helped create the Pick, Click, Give program that we started back in 2008. It has been a really inspirational, motivational program to oversee and to bring so many new donors into philanthropy here in Alaska. So I'm very appreciative of all the work that you've done to not only develop Pick, Click, Give, but to continue to refine it along the way. So. To date, we have raised over $20 million in charitable giving through Pick, Click, Give, and we've given to over 700 charitable organizations. I think we right now face some interesting challenges with Pick, Click, Give, with the uncertainty around the permanent fund, permanent fund, and also with some challenging financial times in the near future. We are seeing it harder and harder for Pick, Click, Give to attract those new donors in particular. We have two sort of bases. One base is the people that give every year through Pick, Click, Give. We believe they are still giving consistently through Pick, Click, Give. It's really the new donor that we continue to be concerned about. From 2015, we had hit our high. We raised $3.3 million, and last year we were just at $2.7 million. But if you actually put that next to the fact that we did half the dividend, we haven't seen half the donors go away. So there is some positive retention there. But I think it actually puts us in a whole new world about thinking about the future of Pick, Click, Give. So I want to go back to the original intent of why we did Pick, Click, Give. It was originally a tool for the nonprofit sector to be able to increase their unrestricted, and that's an important word, charitable donations. They're very, for many of the Pick, Click, Give organizations, these are some of the only unrestricted funds they'll receive all year, so they actually use it to complete their core operations. We also did it as a way for charitable organizations to donate, to cultivate new and existing relationships with their donor. And then we also did it to increase the impact of the nonprofit sector here in Alaska. So overall, it was meant to design to grow philanthropy in Alaska. So we certainly see the merits of Bill 154. We do want to express several concerns that we have already expressed to Senator Wilson. First is that we are concerned that this waters down the charitable intention of Pick, Click, Give and of the charitable organizations that participate in it. It will create some confusion about what is a charitable organization, and this brings into sort of a new element into Pick, Click, Give, which we have not grappled with before. So that sort of we're concerned about the muddying of the water's effect. We're also concerned about the fact that this opens the door. I think when we originally designed Pick, Click, Give, it was meant for just charitable organizations. This opens the door to anybody else who you know, we're basically expressing the intent that anybody can join Picklick Give, regardless of if you're a charitable organization or not. And then finally, our final concern is, I know that all of you are aware that the 7% fee that we charge on Picklick Give to administer the overall marketing of the campaign and administration of the campaign on Alaska Community Foundation side has been an interesting challenge for us to communicate effectively of why it's important and why it's critical. But I think we've got the nonprofit sector and charitable organizations to sort of accept that it really is actually a low overhead number, and they're getting a lot of a return of the, you know, the radio ads, the logo support, all of that that they get for the 7%. So I have some concerns about the perception that the general fund wouldn't have to contribute to the 7%. Along with the rest of the charitable organizations and the perception, just the public perception that that might create. But with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions? Senator Giese.
So, Ms. Kempel, charitable organizations, is that defined as 501c3?
It is, with the exception of some educational organizations such as the university and whatnot also are eligible. Right now, that's how it is defined in statute.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay. Let's continue on here with the public testimony. Pamela, did you want to testify or your questions? Okay. Come on up, Ms. Leary.
For the record, Pam Leary. I'm the director of the Treasury Division. I'm here primarily to answer any questions. My only comment is questions have been raised. How would it impact the Treasury if this bill should pass? And the only impact I see in terms of process is there'll be more money in the general fund to go towards the operating costs of the state.
Okay, thank you. Senator Giese's question.
So we've heard that already there's a group, or maybe there's only a few, people who routinely give their permanent fund dividend back. Do you know how many those are, what kind of revenue that generates, and do you have any thoughts about how many more might if this bill passed?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I do not know how many people this might impact to provide their PFD into the general fund. I do believe that it is nice to have a process through which they can do that rather than not knowing, and that might mean somebody just doesn't do it because they don't know how. In the past, there have been telephone calls into the PFD division, and Director Race probably has a count of how many that she could get to you, but I think it's a handful or so per year.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So if somebody wants to just give $10,000 to the state government because maybe they want an income tax and they're willing to pay, can they just write a check to Treasury or to Revenue, or how do you receive these type of checks?
They can, and if it's the PFD, often Director Race has gotten questions, how do I do this, and they direct them to send a check made out to the state of Alaska, and it goes to our Administrative Services Division of the Department of Revenue. They can contact pretty much anybody. They can contact me and let me know that that's what they want to do, and we can get it into the right account.
Okay. When you say right account, so you mean if I give
into
you
into the general fund. So, oh,
but what if I want to give it to the general fund but have it go to education, K through 12? Can I do that?
Chair Meyer, I'm not sure that it would go anywhere other than the general fund in the current construct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Okay, let's continue on with public testimony here. It looks like, is it Tracy? Tracy Sparks Campbell?
Mr. Chair, I have
questions. Okay, very good. Okay, and how about Deb Etheridge? Questions or testify?
Sure, I'm here to answer questions.
Excellent, okay. And let's see, Glenn Gustafson, it does say for questions, correct, Glenn? Or Glenn online, or how do you?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Chair. Glenn Gustafson here for questions only.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. All right. So is there anybody else that would like to testify, either here in the room, online? Okay. Seeing and hearing no others, then we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. Okay. So what's the committee's will here? Is there any additional questions for the sponsor before we... Okay. You have any other comments, Senator Wilson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Like I said, we are looking at an amendment to this bill, either in this committee or the next committee of referral, to try to lower that note of the ongoing cost and try to figure out ways that we can work to make sure this process is easy. We definitely don't want to burden the additional charitable giving to our charitable organizations around the state. And we will work trying to get that message out, trying to figure out and work with folks to see how we can help better package this for folks, and just trying to find creative ways to help those folks that want to be able to give charitably to the state of Alaska.
Okay, thank you, Senator Wilson. I do see the bill does go to finance next, which would be a more appropriate place to work the fiscal note. So I guess from a policy standpoint, as chairman, I don't have any problems with it. In fact, I think it's a good mechanism for those who want to give their PFD back to the state. Any other comments, questions? If not, then Vice Chair, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 154, version 30LS0081/Delta from this committee to the next with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill will move on to the next committee, which is finance, and we'll stand in recess to sign the book. to Senate State Affairs. The next bill before us is Senate Bill 130, Voter Approval of New Taxes. This is a bill sponsored by myself, Senator Meyer, and I'm going to have my trusty staff, Christine Marsegan, introduce the bill, walk us through it, and explain to the committee what the bill's intent is. Ms. Marsegan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Christine Marsegan, staff to Senator Meyer in the Senate State Affairs Committee. The intent of Senate Bill 130, Voter Approval of New Taxes, is what it says. The intent is to require vote of the people before a broad-based individual income tax or a statewide sales tax takes effect. In the bill, there are four sections. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll go through each section briefly.
Sure, please.
Section 1 would be amended to include tax levied under AS 4398020. That would be a new section that would be added. So this first section basically makes a vote on taxes subject to the same rules and limitations as ballot propositions when it comes to contributions. Section 2 would amend AS 1515030 to direct the Division of Elections Director to place a question on the election ballot. This is essentially the same kind of language used when requiring an advisory vote. Section 3 amends AS 1580-010-33 to include taxes. In that particular section, there are a series of definitions, and there are about 45 definitions in that section, and the word taxes included under questions. Section 4 adds a new section to AS 4398 to include Article 1A, which is the language requiring any bill that the legislature passes levying a broad-based individual income tax or statewide sales tax, or both, to be ratified by the vote of the people, and it specifies the statewide election ballot on which the question on the bill levying the tax is asked in an either yes or no question. Essentially, it just requires that the legislation that you would pass to levy a tax, it has to include the instructions that requires the vote of the people upon passage. So that would be written into like whatever vehicle you used to tax. If passed, this bill would put in statute that any legislation levying a broad-based tax be ratified by the vote of the people. The legal drafter, Emily Noman from Legislative Legal, is supposed to be online. She drafted the bill before you, and she also wrote the memo that was part of your bill packet. And if she's online, she can walk you through the memo talking about why this legislation is unconstitutional. While that may be the case, there are a number of ways that governments have weighted the opinion of its people on taxes. Many may be familiar with the Anchorage Municipality, which uses an advisory vote on any tax increases, or proposition process that may alter or do away with a tax. According to a very cursory survey by the good folks over at Legislative Research, they've let me know that Californians have voted on 10 statewide sales tax-related ballot measures since 1932. Of those, 10, 4 were defeated and 6 were approved. Colorado, as many people know, have what is called TABOR, which is Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. They wrote that into their state constitution in 1992, and it basically had a simple premise. If lawmakers want to raise taxes or issue a debt, they need to ask the voters for permission. I'd also like to point out that Washington State, Washington voters, have been asked on 11 separate occasions to adopt a state personal income tax or corporate income tax. It was only the first vote that was done in 1932 that was successful, and that measure was subsequently thrown out by the state Supreme Court on a 5-4 decision in the 30s. That's not to say that all taxes are voted down. The November 8 election results in our nation show that voters in 22 states approved ballot measures that would provide more than $201 billion in funding extensions and new revenue for state and local transportation projects. Of the 280 transportation funding ballot measures that were approved, There were still results pending in seven local areas, and I think that indicates that there is an appetite for voting into taxes that people want to see, as in this particular case for transportation and roads. The intention of the legislation is to explore this idea that before we enact a new tax, be it an income tax or a sales tax, we should take it to the vote of the people. Voters are being asked to approve budget timelines, spending caps, and per diem funding and spending. It makes sense that we would consult the people that would fit the bill. That is my conclusion. Senator Meyer, if you wish, we can have someone from legal walk us through the accompanying memo or address any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Marsigan. Before we go to Emily, let's see if the committee has any questions. No?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering why we're looking at a bill that Ledge Legal says is unconstitutional.
That's a good question, and we're going to hear from Ledge Legal as to why they say it's unconstitutional. Senator Giesel.
Well, not so much a question, but a comment. It's my understanding, and perhaps Senator Egan can flesh that out, that Juneau actually votes on sales taxes. I think it's every 5 years. The citizens decide whether to put in, I think it's a 1.5% sales tax.
That's true, but that's a little above 1.5. But what we do, we have a permanent tax, and what we vote is to extend it.
Thank you, Senator Giesel and Senator Egan. And I know. We vote all the time for bonds, for example. So okay, let's go ahead and go then to Ms. Newman of Ledge Legal, and if you could comment on your memo that you've attached to this bill about the bill and. What's your opinion that you have arrived at concerning the bill, Ms. Newman? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Okay, so could you address the committee and let the committee know how you arrived at this bill being unconstitutional as it currently is, and then maybe
sure.
and then perhaps how we could make it constitutional. Like if we made an advisory vote, for example. But go ahead with your explanation.
Sure. For the record, my name is Emily Nauman, and I'm calling from Legislative Legal Services. My understanding is that you've asked me to summarize why I believe that the bill is very likely, if not certainly, going to be found unconstitutional if it's passed by the Supreme Court. And to begin, I would say that I've heard some discussion about other types of jurisdictions, other states, and even some of the municipalities in Alaska, and they all have different rules about this kind of vote. The concerns that I have with this bill are specifically because it's a state law being enacted under the provisions of our Constitution that bind the legislature to act and pass bills in certain ways. Starting with one of the main concerns, although it's not in the Constitution outright, there is a concern that the U.S. Supreme Court has found for any time that a legislature attempts to bind a future legislature. In other words, this bill has the effect of putting a requirement on all the subsequent legislatures for any tax that they want to pass. So that's really probably my primary concern, although it's not my only one. We also have a concern that under the Constitution, Article 9, Section 1, the power of taxation cannot be delegated. This is generally recognized as a legislative power, and my concern is that if we're leaving it up to the people on whether or not to enact a tax, that the delegation of the legislature's power to tax in direct contradiction to Article 9, Section 1. I also have a concern about the use of this structure as an initiative or referendum. You know, our, and this is a little more of a muddy issue, but our Constitution contemplates an initiative and a referendum as the two sort of methods to bring a binding vote to the people about something that is going to become law or a law that's repealed. The initiative and the referendum are really fleshed out in our Constitution, but our Constitution doesn't really have any space for this kind of vote that originates from the legislature, save a constitutional amendment, which is, of course, a different structure. My final concern is about the actual enactment. There's a number of sections of the Constitution in Article 2, Sections 14, 16, 17, 18, and they really talk about how and when a law or a bill becomes a law. And there's going to be some timing issues that we're running into related to enactment. For instance, you know, normally when a law, when a bill becomes law is 90 days after it's approved by the governor or overridden, a veto is overridden by the legislature. And that language is in the Constitution. Now, this, if we pass a tax bill that becomes law but is delayed in effect, that sort of structure isn't really contemplated in the Constitution, and I have some concerns about how that would be integrated as well. That's a quick summary of the constitutional issues that I have with the bill.
Okay, very good. I think your first comment had to do with the United States Supreme Court.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, like, how a state like Colorado was able to get around that.
Right. And as was discussed before, Colorado actually was able to get around that with a constitutional amendment. The state, through the Constitution, can make the legislature comply with whatever requirements they would like. So certainly one way to make this bill, you know, quote-unquote legal, would be instead to rephrase it as a constitutional amendment. Of course, there are limitations or extra additional steps that have to, that are required before a constitutional amendment resolution can pass, but certainly if you wanted to put this type of requirement in the Constitution, I would have no problem with that.
Okay. Well, very good. And then what if we made it an advisory vote, then? Would that, you wouldn't have any problems with that either, would you, Ms. Newman?
Right. Advisory votes are non-binding, and I think would still worry a little bit about the structure, about how the legislature would get that on the ballot, but I think those are issues that could be worked out. One possible, you know, idea that I've seen floated in the past several years that I've worked here is having an advisory vote and requiring that advisory vote take place before the effective date of a tax bill. Of course, that language has to be inserted in every single tax bill that passed. There's not really a way to develop one piece of legislation that would do that in one bill now, you know, now this year. But, you know, if a tax bill was proposed this year, you could require an advisory vote to happen before the law is enacted and give the legislature time to come back and sort of react to that advisory vote. But again, that would have to be on a bill-by-bill basis.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that explanation. Any question? Any other questions for Emily? Yes, Senator Egan.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. So, with your testimony, if a future legislature has to pass a tax, Mr. Chair, they have the votes to ignore or to change it. So why didn't the chair propose a constitutional amendment instead?
That's a very good question, Senator Egan, and perhaps the chair will do that. you know, we wanted to bring this bill before the committee just as is.
I understand.
So that we could hear the concerns both from the committee standpoint, from the public standpoint, and from a legal standpoint, of course. So, my intent is not to move this out today, but I think we will go ahead and take public testimony, and then hold the bill and make some revisions to it so that it will hold a legislative legal muster that way. Senator Giesel.
So, Ms. Nauman, I think, clarify for me, on point number two, you said voter approval of tax, and you cite Article 9, Section 1, the power of taxation shall never be surrendered. This power shall not be suspended or contracted away, except as provided in this article. So it sounds to me like if we were to, if the sponsor of the bill were to change this to be an advisory vote, would we have to repeal Article 9, Section 1?
Through the chair, no. And I believe that the reason is no, because an advisory vote has no effect. So the issue in the bill in front of you is that the bill would have the effect of leaving whether or not a tax is enacted. That decision will be made by the people of the state through a vote rather than by the legislature. Because an advisory vote has no effect, it only informs the legislature. It would still be the legislature enacting the tax.
Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, so Ms. Nauman, so if the chair, the sponsor of the bill, decided to amend the bill to amend the Constitution to allow the citizens to determine taxation, then we would have to, repeal Article 9, Section 1?
No, you're really saved by the language that says, except as otherwise provided in this article, I believe it is, and I would imagine that we would put a constitutional amendment in that article. So that, I mean, I without drafting it, I can't say for certain, but that would probably be my strategy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Giesel, thank you. So, Ms. Nauman, if the legislative body passes an income tax, let's say, or sales tax, and then then there's a referendum to repeal that, that's perfectly okay, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so they can, after the fact, make it go away, but they can't before have a vote, I guess, a legal vote. Okay.
Yeah, right. The Constitution does contemplate a referendum, and there's a structure in place for that, so that's why that's constitutionally permissible as opposed to the structure that you're exploring here.
Okay. That's very good. Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you for being with us, Ms. Nauman. We'll continue here with other testimony. I have Josie. Is that right? Josie Bonke? Banky? Probably saying that wrong. Is that you?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so.
My name is Brian Jackson. I'm with the division. Josie is another meeting, a prearranged meeting.
Okay. Well, come on up, since you're here. And if you could, please put your name and affiliation on the record again, please.
Yeah, my name is Brian Jackson. I'm an election program manager for the Division of Elections.
Okay. Okay, so you've heard some of the concerns with the bill, and obviously we're going to rework the bill somewhat. Does the Division of Elections have any input or concerns about the bill?
I don't know that we necessarily have any input. The bill looks pretty straightforward. It sounds like it might have to be reworked and we'd have to reanalyze it at that time. This would place the question to the voters on a ballot. That would also force the division to put the information in the official election pamphlet. So the division would need appropriate time to obtain that information as well as get it translated in Alaska Native languages, because we do that.
Sure. Okay. Thank you for that. Any questions? Senator Wilson?
Would there be an additional cost or the difference between an advisory vote versus just going through the general election process before going to the people?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I don't know that answer off the top of my head, but I can certainly get that information and get it to the committee.
Okay, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
We'll send that to the my office, and we'll make sure all committee members have that. Okay, any other questions for Division of Elections? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, was there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on Senate Bill 130? I see Mr. DeWitt back there. Well, there is a letter of support from the small business, NFIB. Okay, excellent. And I think we were contacted by NAACP in support as well. Their letter has not made it yet. And I don't believe he's online to testify. So if there's no one else online to testify, then we'll go ahead or in the room. We'll go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 130. And we will hold this bill for now and see if we can't rework it into something that can pass legal muster. So with that, is there anything else to come before the committee at this time? Okay, if not, then the next meeting will be Thursday, February 1st at 3:30. And we'll have Senate Concurrent Resolution 10, Year of Invocation. Innovation, okay. Okay, I misspelled that. And then Senate Bill 152, Patriots Day. So thank you, everyone, for your time and for joining the committee. And with that, we are adjourned.